This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the return of Ugandan legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, better known as Bobi Wine, has excited his supporters and raised their hopes for political change. The government says the opposition leader's political fame will fizzle.
That's Halima Othmani reporting from Kampala. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Tanzanian officials say at least 136 people died when a ferry capsized and sank on Lake Victoria. While Ebola is being contained in eastern DRC, outbreaks in North Kivu and Ituri provinces remain active. And in Algeria politics, we'll look at the crisis of the succession process. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The return of Ugandan legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, better known as singer Bobi Wine, has excited his supporters and raised their hopes for political change. The government says the opposition leader's political fame will fizzle. Halima Othmani has the latest from Kampala.
Hundreds of young people gathered Thursday at Robert Kyagulanyi's home in the Wakiso district outside of Kampala. Their songs and chants made clear who they want Uganda's next leader to be. Beaten but not broken, the 36-year-old Kyagulanyi told VOA he cannot think about the 2021 presidential election at the current time.
Right now we are actually slaves in our own country. We cannot speak freely. We cannot even wave to each other freely. So if we have such impunity, we must think about that impunity and how to deal with it. It's now or never. It has never happened before that so many people are so united and are speaking with one voice. This should not be taken for granted.
Kyagulanyi returned to Uganda Thursday after staying in the United States to receive medical treatment. He sustained injuries last month when police arrested him following protests against President Yoweri Museveni in the town of Arua. Nakuya Aida was among those chanting her support for Kyagulanyi. She sees this as the start of a movement.
This is the process leading us to 2021. We are hoping change through election. We are spreading the gospel of people power all over the country. So there is nothing like asking what next. We are already in the transitional process without tear gas, without worry, but with the vigor, with all the courage.
Political analyst Anna Adeke-Baju says young people are tired of hearing the older generation praise the current government for bringing peace after years of conflict. She argues that the younger generation has reached its breaking point.
We're talking about young people who can't get jobs. We're talking about systems that we need to build so that they work for all of us. For our sake as young people, I hope that we are preserved until we can finish this revolution that is already in its primary stages. We would never want, of course, our country to be marred by more bloodshed.
Ofwono Opondo, the government spokesperson, says the ruling National Resistance Movement, through its political promises, created expectations.
NRM government is not able to create for them opportunities at a faster pace. And therefore, there is genuine discontent and yearning, particularly opportunity for gainful employment. But that cannot be achieved by the kind of emotional wave of Bobi Wine.
Kyagulanyi and several opposition colleagues are still facing charges of treason in connection with the incident in Arua when someone threw a stone at the president's motorcade, shattering a car window. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Tanzanian officials say at least 136 people died when a ferry capsized and sank on Lake Victoria. It was unclear how many people were aboard, but estimates were put at 300, raising fears that the death toll could reach 200 or more. Dozens of rescue workers were searching for survivors. 37 people were rescued after the boat went down yesterday afternoon, close to the dock at Yukarerwe, the lake's largest island. It was returning from a busy market day on nearby Eucara Island. Lake Victoria is Africa's largest lake by area and is bordered by Tanzania, Uganda, and Kenya. It has been hit by several major ferry disasters, including in 1996, when the ferry MV Bukova sank, killing more than 800 people. The World Health Organization reports substantial progress is being made in containing the spread of the Ebola virus in eastern DRC. It warns, however, that new hotspots are appearing. The WHO says the number of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola in Congo stands at 143, including 97 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO officials say they are pleased with the progress being made in limiting the spread of the Ebola virus, but that the outbreak of this fatal disease in Congo's conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces remains active and vigilance must be maintained. WHO reports the situation in Mangina, the initial epicenter of the epidemic in North Kivu, is stabilizing. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA there are no security problems there, so health workers are able to safely access the area and treat those affected by the disease.
But immediately to the east is an inaccessible area. This region is in security level 4. Which is one of the highest in the UN security phasing system. For example, the road from Beni to Oicha is in the red zone. So in some places we are really able to move to work. In some other places it's more difficult.
Shaib says the cities of Beni and Butembo have become the new hotspots. She notes Butembo is in the red zone. The WHO spokeswoman says there is significant risk that Ebola could spread there, and health workers have to remain on top of the many challenges facing them. Among the challenges is a growing resistance in some communities to measures used to contain the virus. For example, Shaib says some people are reluctant to go to treatment centers for care. Others are unwilling to change traditional burial practices, such as touching the bodies of those who have died from Ebola. WHO warns this is one of the surest ways of spreading the infection. The outbreak in the DRC is the 10th since Ebola was first identified in 1976. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
WHO officials say they are pleased with the progress being made in limiting the spread of the Ebola virus, but that the outbreak of this fatal disease in Congo's conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces.
At 13 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The return of Ugandan legislator Robert Chagulani, better known as singer Bobby Wine, excites Uganda's youth. Tanzanian officials say at least 136 people died when a ferry capsized and sank on Lake Victoria. And while Ebola is being contained in eastern DRC, outbreaks in North Kivu and Ituri provinces remain active. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Well, a Kenyan court today temporarily lifted a ban on the movie Rafiki. Justice Wilfrida Okwani said that during a seven-day period, the film, a lesbian love story produced in Kenya, can be screened to adults. The ruling means that Rafiki will be eligible for Oscar consideration as the best foreign language film. Ryle Ambor has the story from Nairobi.
Kenya's Film and Classification Board banned Rafiki in April, just hours before it premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in France. Directed by Wanuri Kahio, it was the first Kenyan film ever chosen to be screened at the festival. Rafiki, the Swahili word for friend, is a film about two girls who fall in love and as a result become outcasts in their community. The Kenya Film Board banned it for its homosexual theme. Board CEO Ezekiel Mutua said the film had a clear intent to promote lesbianism in Kenya. Kahio filed a suit against the board on September 10th, leading to Friday's ruling. Carol Liam, a lesbian in Nairobi, was elated by the judgment.
Today is a victory not just for members of the LGBTI community, but a victory for everyone who upholds human rights. The old colonial laws have caused us a lot of grief. but we are glad that the codes are being broken slowly by slowly.
After the ruling, Kahia tweeted, "Our constitution is strong. Give thanks to freedom of expression. We did it. We will be posting about Nairobi screening soon." Time is of essence. For the film to be eligible for Oscar consideration as Best Foreign Language Film, it must be screened in its country of origin for 7 days before the September 30th deadline. Mutua, the head of the film board, expressed outrage over the court's decision in a series of tweets. One read, "It would be a tragedy and a shame to have homosexual films defining the Kenyan culture." In a press release, Mutua said the ruling was a sad moment and a great insult, not only to the film industry, but to all Kenyans who stand for morality. He also warned the board is watching to see which theatre will show the film without the board's approval. Homosexuality is illegal in Kenya and punishable by up to 14 years in prison. On Thursday, a Kenyan court is set to rule on another landmark case that seeks to repeal sections of the penal code that criminalizes gay sex in Kenya. The National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission argues that Section 162, 163 and 165 of the code are in breach of the Constitution and basic rights of Kenyan citizens. The laws were introduced in Kenya in 1897 when the country was under British rule. In April, Theresa May said she deeply regretted Britain's legacy of anti-gay laws in its former colonies and urged those countries to overhaul what she called outdated laws. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
In other news around the continent, Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika has dismissed nearly a dozen military figures over the past few months. They include four regional commanders, the head of military intelligence, and several generals at the defense ministry. Observers say the president may seek re-election next year and has been concentrating power in his inner circle. Gadek Bagat is a professor of national security at National Defense University in Washington, D.C. He spoke to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the next presidential election in Algeria and the crisis of the succession process.
Algeria, like any developing country, has some issues in economic and political reform. And the military is a very important institution in Algeria. And I believe there is usually efforts to modernize the military, and there is no any indication that there is a challenge from the military to the political leadership.
Regarding the next presidential elections, would Algeria sustain another term for a president who has been confined to a wheelchair for some years?
Like any country, the health of the president is almost kind of classified or not available to the public. President Bouteflika has been in office for a long time, and occasionally he is seen and his picture is in the media. For sure, there is concern about his health. How bad or how good his health is a matter of speculation. It is unknown. So what I do know that the political establishment more or less agrees that he is a unifying figure. This means even if his health is not good, there is no substitute. There is no one public figure. The different factions within the political establishment can agree on.
But prominent Algerian politicians and intellectuals have called on Bouteflika to refrain from running for a fifth term in order to enable Algeria to open a new chapter. Would he positively respond to that call? And if so, how do you envision the succession process in Algeria?
Algeria, like all countries in the Middle East and beyond, there are questions about succession. I mean, you can think about Saudi Arabia, about Egypt, about Kuwait, about many other countries. There is no agreed on rules to handle succession question. As you said, many people in Algeria called on the president to step down or not to run for another term. but Algeria is not different from its neighbors. So will the president of Algeria decide not to seek another term? There is no way to know. Exactly, there is no way to know if Al-Sisi will not seek another term or when, if King Sulaiman of Saudi Arabia will step down. So it is very hard to make any prediction about the fate of leadership in the Arab world. I mean, it is different from the United States. We have election every 4 years. We know more or less what will happen or who will run. In Algeria, like its neighbors, it is very hard to make any prediction.
That's Galdak Bagak, professor of national security at the National Defense University in Washington. He was speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Catholic parishioners gathered for a special service in Kinshasa last month to commemorate pro-democracy activists who died for their cause and others who are in detention. Tensions continue to run high in the DRC ahead of long-delayed elections, now scheduled for December. Chika Adua has more from Kinshasa.
The Catholic Church is a powerful force in the DRC. Nearly half of the country's population are members. They say they're inspired by the Church's steady demands for good governance. But ever since the anti-government protests began early last year, government security forces have been targeting certain churchgoers like Gertrude Ekombe. We did not go back to our families, she says. We are living in clandestine since January until today. For our security, we informed the UN mission, MONUSCO, about our movements, and some of their agents go before us whenever we go out. They are even here with us. The demonstrations began after President Joseph Kabila refused to step down at the end of his second term in December 2016. Kabila, who has been in power since 2001, finally announced he would step down in August. He said he is supporting former Interior Minister Emmanuel Shadary in the upcoming polls. But it took a series of demonstrations for Kabila to finally step down. Human Rights Watch says at least 45 people have been killed by government forces in church-organized rallies. Rosie Mukendi, an assistant professor, was among those killed. His sister Muriel said the family was always concerned about his anti-government activism. He was killed like a dog in the middle of a crowd, she says. Rosie had an early commitment and he was very young when he was interested in politics. As his relatives, we didn't agree with his militancy. We found it always dangerous because we are in Africa and we deal more with autocrats than Democrats. The government says it is still investigating Rossi's death. Lambert Mende, the federal minister of communication, said he thinks the Catholic Church leadership is overstepping its boundaries.
So let them remove their status of bishops and become politicians. And we run together and we shall see who will win elections. We are talking of, you know, leading a country. It is not the bishops to lead a country.
Mende also blames Western governments for interfering in local politics and inciting protest. He said some of the local Catholic bishops are being sponsored by Western governments. The bishops support a lay committee known as the CLC to coordinate the church's activism. Felix Kabange speaks for the CLC.
Le comité de coordination se bat pour que...
The CLC is fighting to safeguard freedom of expression, especially in this pre-electoral context, Kabange says. Our members can't move freely, and at any time they can be arrested. This is a sacrifice for the sake of public interest. Parishioners say as long as the church leadership continues to back them, they'll continue to nonviolently demand greater democracy in the DRC. Chika Odua for VOA News, Kinshasa.
5 years ago, Somali militant group Al-Shabaab attacked a major shopping mall in Nairobi, killing more than 60 people. A new report says the group remains a threat to Kenya, but notes the government has learned to work with the Muslim community, helping to reduce the likelihood of successful attacks. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA.
On September 21, 2013, four armed men from the Al-Shabaab militant group stormed the Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi, shooting people on sight and taking control of the mall with hundreds trapped. When the four-day siege ended, 67 people were dead and more than 150 wounded. Al-Shabaab said it was retaliating for the Kenyan government sending forces into Somalia 2 years earlier. 31-year-old John Wangombe worked at the Westgate. He was one of the hundreds of people at the mall when the attack happened.
I used to work at Westgate, control room. So I used to monitor the cameras and their networks at the Westgate Mall. So on that specific day, I was on duty. So we were doing all the monitoring. And then all of a sudden, we started hearing gunshots. So what came first to my mind was to run away.
The IT expert was familiar with the mall and hid in the store with a dozen others. He told VOA he could hear gunshots and people screaming. Police rescued him 3 hours later. The father of one went back to Westgate one time after it reopened in 2015 and never returned after that.
Right now they have so many security guys. It's like you fear going there because you think they might attack again. And the security, they put you off. Because they have a lot of checkups, the gates are opening and closing, they have a lot of sensors all over. You get scared even going around there when you see all the security guys there.
Al-Shabaab attacked a college in the town of Garissa, killing nearly 150 people, most of them students. The International Crisis Group warned in a new report Friday that Al-Shabaab is still a threat to Kenya and the region. The report said a government crackdown that followed the Westgate attack fueled anger within the Muslim community and that has helped Al-Shabaab to recruit more in Kenya. But Muridi Mutiga, the Crisis Group's Kenya researcher, says the government has learned to work with the community.
Since 2015, given the step change, particularly enhanced engagement with communities, appointment of some leaders from local communities, engagement with elected officials at the local level, and generally a more convivial relationship with the community has yielded better intelligence and in turn has resulted in a lower level of attacks.
Kenyan forces are still part of the African Union mission that provides security to the Somali government and its population. Al-Shabaab continues to demand that Kenyan troops leave Somalia and carries out frequent attacks along the borders and the coastal town of Lamu. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa. Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.